This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Go to Squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan to receive 10% off your first order. Hello, my sweet, delectable, delicious, sentient toes protruding from the perfumed foot of an unknown nameless goddess. It is I, Duncan Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. If you hear in the background an annoying drone, which you probably do, that's my air conditioner. It's a Frigidaire, and I really appreciate the input I got from the last podcast. A lot of you guys had some ideas for ways that I could cool the room down quietly. One of them, something called a swamp fan or something like that, a swamp gasser, which I'm not going to use just because of the name. I don't even know what it does. A lot of interesting inventions, strange assemblages of vacuum cleaners and dry ice. A lot of advice that I should have someone fan us as we do the podcast. I'd love to do that, but the scheduling to get a professional fanner and the cost of it, it seems like it would be such a pain in the ass that it would make more sense to just go to an office or install central air than to recruit someone to fan my guests. And honestly, I don't know how much fanning is going to cut through the oily, thick heat that is generated from a 100-year-old house in a city going through a 4-year drought. This is a preternatural heat. This is the kind of heat that you might feel being emitted from a obsidian demon horn found beneath some forbidden Mayan pyramid. This is the heat that rises from the flesh of a desert madman who just read the Necronomicon and is now running, gibbering through the dunes about some ancient thing that lies at the edge of time and waits to devour humanity. This is the kind of heat that comes out of the many moldering, dried up coyote carcasses that lie at the base of Griffith Park. This is a sick heat. This is the heat of the madman's diaper. This is the heat of the spoon used to scoop the awful remnants from said diaper into the mouth of some evil fly goddess. This is the heat of the fly goddess's vagina as it explodes great pestilent blasts of egg larva into some interdimensional battlefield where the larva explodes into thousands of tiny spiders that climb into the nose and ears of all those who stand in their way, slowly and painfully dissolving their brain into a liquefied mush which they vomit into the air in great geysers of green. It's an evil heat, so I hope you'll forgive me if I've got the AC running. I just don't know what else to do. If I don't keep this thing running in the podcast studio, then I've got to go and find a studio to record at that isn't in my house, or I have to move. Which, by the way, if you live in Los Angeles and you want to create some extreme cognitive dissonance for yourself, I highly recommend going to PadMapper, which is a great apartment finding application, and put in a zip code like North Carolina, and then put in whatever the rent is that you're paying for a house here, and look at what kind of homes you can get in other parts of the country, and you very well might want to run into your kitchen, open up a drawer, pull out your favorite pair of chopsticks, and drive them into your ear, piercing the membrane that separates your ear canal from your brain, and just lobotomize yourself as you realize that for the rent that you're paying in Los Angeles, you could be renting a multi-storied Victorian mansion in the midst of some beautiful verdant grove populated by pan-like creatures who on nights of the full moon will bring you wineskin filled with some sacred, magical, psilocybin-infused wine which will allow you to temporarily dance with all the sweet goddesses that have ever wandered through the emerald green of primordial earth. Motherfucker, it's expensive here in LA. And when you consider the fact that you're paying this massive amount for rent in a place that is essentially just it's like living inside the fur of a sun-blasted dog. Anywho, we're going to dive right into this podcast. With us today are two awesome human beings, comedian Fred Stoller and Dr. Drew. We shall leap right into that, but first, some quick business. This episode is brought to you by the Pixel Lords over at Squarespace.com. Do you need a new website? Does your website protrude from the internet like the pink scrotal fold of a beach dad, unaware of the fact that one of his testicles is extended underneath his American Apparel too short bathing suit? Then it's time for an upgrade, and that's where Squarespace comes in. You don't have to go down to the website district in downtown Los Angeles if you want a website. You don't have to go to the dark corners of Craigslist. You can just go to squarespace.com and create a beautiful website. If you use offer code Duncan, you'll get 10% off, and you won't get hacked to death by a pseudo web designer. I actually interviewed one of these shits. Listen.
Hey, my name's Darvin Wilmont. I'm a pseudo web designer. I tell you what I really get off on. Shooting in drinks and resealing them and putting back in the minibar at a hotel. But because that's all illegal, I design websites for people. For money. A lot of money. Fuck you.
What a true bastard. Don't let one of these monsters shit all over your beautiful golden dreams. Go to squarespace.com today and create a simple, powerful, beautiful website. They have 24/7 support via live chat and email. It's only $8 a month, and you get a free domain if you buy Squarespace for the year. The website will scale to any device, from phone to iPad, and every website comes with a free online store. If you're thinking you need a website, give these guys a shot. They've been supporting this podcast almost since the very beginning, and you can start a trial with no credit card required just to make sure it's right for you. Go to squarespace.com today and use offer code Duncan, and you will get 10% off your first purchase. We're also brought to you by Amazon.com. If you go to DuncanTrussell.com, in any of the comments sections there, you will find a portal. And if you click through that, anything that you buy on Amazon, they will give us a very small percentage of it. So for all of you who continue to use that portal, I thank you. It's an excellent way for you to support this podcast while buying all that beautiful plastic stuff that makes your life so very happy. And I know this is a hacky premise and has been said a million times, but don't go on Amazon stoned late at night, or you will end up with things like what I'm staring at right now, which is a blackhead remover. And this is a direct result of being super high, watching videos of people removing blackheads from the nose, this terrible grizzled nose of an Indian gentleman that has mysteriously become populated with a field of the most foul blackheads that you've ever seen in your life. And it's just a 30-minute video of this doctor removing them as he comments on it. And I was super high and went on Amazon and ordered one of these blackhead removers, I guess thinking that I would remove blackheads from my own face. And I don't really have any, but this thing arrived, and it's just a mark of exactly why you shouldn't get high and go on Amazon. Because you'll end up like that weird doctor in Dune trying to remove boils from your face. They also have bidets, drones, toilet paper, anything you might need. Just go through the portal first at DuncanTrussell.com. I've got some upcoming tour dates. I'm going to be in Australia in November, and I'm going to be the Laughing Skull in Atlanta starting on October 15th. All of those tickets are available at DuncanTrussell.com. We also have a beautiful shop located at DuncanTrussell.com with a lot of great t-shirts, posters, and we just added festival banners so you could display your alliance with the overmind that is the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast at the next music festival you go to. Go check them out. All right, let's get on with the show. With us here today are two wonderful humans. One of them is a returning guest who you know from everything, Dr. Drew. And we have a first-time guest on the show who has been a guest star on so many TV shows that he wrote a book about it called Maybe We'll Have You Back, The Life of a Personal TV Guest Star. Everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, Fred Stoller and Dr. Drew. Dr. Drew, Fred, welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Art Podcast. This is an unexpected pleasure. Thanks for putting this together, you guys.
Oh, thank you. Usually I like to go on these to, like, you know, I don't know, but this I'm really... You're going to help me learn things. You're so smart. And Dr. Drew was saying, Duncan,
well this is what
articulate it.
This is what happened. Fred was on my podcast, and somewhere in the middle of the podcast, he started waxing poetic about edibles and how they changed things for him and all his misconceptions.
Late discovery in life,
all these misconceptions he had about pot and its clinical utility. And then he started talking about alternative realities, and I went, okay, we got to go talk to Duncan.
Because
we
I don't think it's alternative. I think it is real. Right now...
Wait, sum it up. Sum up the idea here. What's the main
Tell your story. Tell your story and then the idea.
Well, long story short, that we talked before, I didn't really do pot because in the 80s I got a bad sore throat and the stigma was Cheech and Chong. Hey, dude. Hey, 7 years. What? There was actually a commercial where pot does nothing, really does nothing, because they see them, hey, I thought it was 7 years ago. So I thought it was just idiots. So, but then I did, I forgot whose podcast, and Speedweed was promoting it, and they give you free samples at the end. Hey, Gino gives you the stuff. And I
Speed pot or whatever they call
it. Yeah, it's a little sample bag.
Sample
he gives you.
Bag, a little wonderful white bag.
Yes.
Gummy bears.
Oh.
Joints.
And I was thinking, I don't do my. And someone said, "Oh no, it opens up your mind," and so I am a late convert to it. And what I was telling Drew is that, well, first of all, when I get stoned, like I lie in my bed and go, "Why would someone need to go to Hawaii?" This, you close your eyes, and when it feels right, and then on edibles,
he was in Hawaii in his own mind.
Yeah, when it's working, you're everywhere. I'm George Clooney. I'm the guy who got paralyzed, shot by the cops. Every good thing, bad thing, everything. No one has a nicer house. That's my house. It's all anything you've thought of. All that generic. And I was telling Drew that I was starting to tell you. I was trying to thank Joe Rogan for taking the stigma away. And there was a big thing at the Comedy Store. And all these stragglers were hanging out there. I never thought I'd be the guy trying to take free joints that were in the middle. Like, oh, these are free? And I'm putting them in my pockets. I became that guy. And Joe's going, whatever. He didn't know who I was. He thought I was, well, I'm not saying anyone's better or worse, but one of these guys who just hangs out and puts the joints in, which I was. And Morgan Murphy was there saying all this hippie stuff, this like hacky, like you're one with everything. Okay, so basically, I try not to do pot or whatever when I have to memorize stuff and I have to do real world stuff. But then I thought, when this booze, I was saying you're drunk, but you're drunk in the real world. And so when it's really working, when the door's shut, I'm thinking, why is that reality not the real world? Why is this world? And people can't see, but I'm picturing my finger like a little piece of sand. That's the world we know, where there's traffic lights, where Les Moon is a gatekeeper, where, you know, Barack Obama is the president, where, you know, and I'm saying...
Wait, which one's Les Moon?
He, like, runs CBS and everything.
Yeah, that's funny. Before we get into that, see, that's... Well, you're talking about the old world, man. Those guys are gatekeepers to... It's really funny, because there were all these gatekeepers
right
to this castle. And
right.
Then suddenly technology creates a billion more gates, which is why it's really funny, because the gates that everybody used to go into are still clotted with people trying to go through those gates. It's hilarious. It's like, if you ever noticed at the grocery store, a new line will open.
Yeah.
And there'll be this huge line and no one will move to the new line because they're sheep and they feel like, oh, I just got to stay in the line that everybody else is staying.
Right.
Another example is traffic. GPS is creating all this, like, if people use like
Waze
or certain GPS programs, apps, they end up all following the GPS exactly. And so they end up with like in these huge
clusters.
Lines of traffic. So if you just dodge around the traffic and ignore the voice of the GPS for a few minutes, you will zoom around all these poor people who are just being controlled by the machine. A great metaphor for a lot of things.
When you say the old world, I think maybe what I'm gathering is what I used to think is the real world. Like, for example, when I'm judging myself, I'm a guy that's closer to 60 than 50 in a bunch of years, hasn't had pilot auditions in years, has always lived alone.
Pilot auditions.
What I'm trying to say is what I judge myself. What I'm trying to say, these are things. But that is just a sliver when the edible's working right. What I used to think was who I was a guy that's, you know, but
wait, don't finish the sentence. Who were you?
I used to think I was these things that in the real world, a guy that's whatever, never been married, a woman nervous about that, always been alone, you know, closer to 60 than 50, not my IMBD, whatever, the credits, all those things that are made up. That's why is that the real world? I used to think that's the real world, those judgments.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about those judgments. Cognitions. Let's talk about those cognitions.
They're not real when the edible's working right.
Do you know about CBT?
Yes.
I'm listening to this audiobook on CBT, and it's exploding my brain. How much do you know about CBT?
I know about the application. I'm not trained to do it.
It's
amazing. It's very useful.
What is it?
Yeah.
So CBT, cognitive behavior therapy.
Oh, I come up with that on my own, I think.
But go ahead. What have you learned?
So the idea is there's a triangle in cognitive behavior therapy, and at the very top of the triangle you have your thoughts. And the bottom two points of the triangle, you have behaviors and emotions. And the concept is very simple. It's thoughts influence behaviors and emotions. Every point in the triangle influences the other points.
Right.
So if you change
it's a holism. It's a holistic.
Right.
Yeah.
Change your behaviors, your thoughts are going to change.
Yeah.
Change your
emotions. I thought the thoughts change the behaviors.
Everything changes everything else. So the idea is you use a kind of empiricism to explore the cognitions you're having to determine whether or not these cognitions are right. Because a lot of people, they have Transylvania in their heads, populated by superstitious gypsies that parade around as the form of all these ridiculous thoughts that you tell yourself again
exactly.
And again and again. And what you just listed is cognitions. You just listed a series of self-defining thought patterns, which the invitation from CBT is, why don't we begin to explore these thoughts scientifically? So the question is, you know,
these judgments that are not reality.
Well,
I was telling you guys before that I realized almost every in this quote unquote real world, I'm more rational in that other world of the altered state, but almost every thought I have is irrational in the real world. Like this asshole in front of me, I'll get upset that someone had a shoe horse tattoo on their neck. This asshole, you know what I mean? And
no,
I get livid and things.
You get upset about.
Yeah, that's real. So let me backtrack. You know, when people give unsolicited advice, see my shrink. When someone seems calm, you go, how do I not hate myself? I once said to my friend, I know they say don't hate yourself. Easier said than done. And he told me.
You hate yourself.
I've gotten better. I'll tell you what happened. I used to beat myself up. And he told me about affirmations, how I've just been grown up with, you know, my mother saying, if I lost something, you know, you'd lose your head if it wasn't attached to you. And I go, I'm a piece of shit. If I can't find my glasses, you fucking asshole. I hate my, you know, I used to play tennis with Norm MacDonald, throw the rackets. Like, if I miss, you asshole. So then he told me about.
Norm told you?
No. He doesn't, the affirmations. But that you have to little. I used to say, I love myself. I accept myself. I'd have to have those guys fight out the years of piece of shit, you know, those guys. So then what happened was that when I did the affirmations and meditation, then I'd hear, you piece of shit. There were so many of those guys in my head saying, you're a piece of shit loser, Fred. I couldn't discern them. They were almost like, la, 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 you know, those things. And then when I started helping myself with cognition and affirmations, it was a step to hear, discern those things, you piece of shit, because then I could at least, like, psh, and try to shout it out.
Okay, here's my question for you. So what you're doing in CBT, and God forgive me, I read
is it CBT sort of what I'm doing?
But go ahead.
So CBT, there's a concept called diffusion is what they call it. And the idea is it's a process where the fusion between you and your thoughts is dissolved through a variety of processes. All of them seem like mindfulness in Buddhism.
Yes.
So it's sort of like the
these concepts all overlap tremendously.
It's amazing.
Yeah, right.
It's crazy the way that they just completely.
But now when I do that, I say
and
to
it's,
myself,
"It's funny. It's like they've like we're rediscovering it. It's stuff 2,000 years ago."
Yeah, but it's 2,000 years ago, and it would. But it was it, the way that they described it back then is maybe using language that's outdated.
That's right. It's hard it's to hard to understand.
But like, yeah. like I say, what I do now is if I'm at farmer's market and it's crowded, you fucking, I go, Fred, you're being irrational. So I tell myself I'm being irrational, and it helps. I recognize I'm being irrational.
Here's what I'm trying to get at here, though.
Sure.
So there's when you say, I tell myself, it's a really interesting thing to say, isn't it? Because you've bifurcated yourself. There's the you that's being told and the you that's doing the telling.
Yes.
So in Buddhism and in a lot of other philosophies and in CBT, they invite you to begin to explore what are you really? If you're aware, in other words, like I'm sitting here, I can see you guys, you're sitting in front of me, I see this desk, the yes. microphone, and I'm aware of it, but I don't think to myself generally, I am this microphone. Thoughts, I'm aware of them. They're some kind of ephemeral structure in my mind that I'm aware of. And yet the difference between thoughts and the microphone is when I have thoughts, I think, that's me. I'm thinking this. Yet it seems that just because I'm aware of it, the very act
you're not your thoughts.
I'm not my thoughts. So then the question is, well, what are you? And that's where you get into some really interesting terrain. And that's where the stuff really starts merging into Buddhism, because the question is, what? Who is
one of the thoughts that hit me on an edible is, don't define me by my past. And I do that, and people do that. And you know, but when I'm talking about the real world, Jim Jeffries had a great bit with the gun control when he said, maybe I'm not even in front of a crowd. Maybe I'm in a sane asylum just talking to the wall, and I'm imagining I'm in front of 1,200
right.
people. And a lot of – like right now, maybe I'm – like okay, I'll give you an example. I don't read Amazon reviews. You know, I learned that. They did the Audible of my Kindle single, my Seinfeld year. I finally did – and I, you know, I looked at it. This, who wants to hear this nasally loser guy talk? Don't spend $1.99. So then I got upset, and I thought maybe I probably just imagined I read that, because that negative conception of reading a bad Amazon review was not that this guy did it, but that was my interpretation. It's almost like I imagined that. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. There's a term in yoga called the vrittis, and I'm probably mispronouncing it, V-R-T-T-I-S. It's a term related to thought forms, and it kind of roughly translates into cyclones in your head. So
when something bad happens, I imagine that bad, what I think is bad.
Well, okay, so let's just think about, and maybe Dr. Drew can help us with the neurology behind it, because I really don't understand what exactly happens, but when you're taking in reality.
Right.
What's happening is that you are creating a neurological corollary for reality
yes.
in your mind. That's
yes.
correct.
Your, right? your brain is creating a representation of the experience through your sensory mechanisms.
It's like a chemical reflection of stuff.
That's a way to think about it. It's so much more bizarre and holistic than that. It almost defies description.
It's crazy to think about.
Right.
But what's happening is there's all this phenomena happening out here.
I think discussing phenomena per se is a way to conceptualize. So phenomenology is a great way to approach this.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this stuff is flowing into
There's things out there.
Yes.
And it impinges on our sensory organs, and it's converted into signals.
Yes.
And those signals are converted into something in our head.
Yes.
But like if I have a good experience, it's almost like I created that. If I have something quote-unquote bad, it's almost let's say a guy came up to my car and threw coffee in it. It's almost like I – not that I created that because I manifested it, but because my interpretation, it's
Can I give you an example
Please.
Okay. I like to use this cake example. So I give you a slice of cake. It's not good cake, not bad cake, just a normal slice of cake, right?
Right.
I bring it in. I give you the slice of cake, and I say to you, Fred, guess what, man? I just found out that there's $5 million you weren't aware of in a trust that you're going to get. When you eat that cake, how delicious is that cake going to be?
That's called priming.
That's
priming your brain.
That's a great piece of cake, right?
Yeah.
That's maybe the best piece of cake you ever had in your life. You're going to remember
that. By the way, you could have handed him dog shit. It would have been the best piece of dog shit you ever had either.
That's it. But right. the cake that I hand to you, and then I tell you about your cancer diagnosis and that you have 1 month to live,
yes,
it's not a good cake. that cake ain't going to taste very good.
Right.
Yes.
That's going to be a good cake. So, so in that way, it's like what you begin to realize is that you have all this stuff coming into your experience, but really, what's happening is your apprehension of what's happening is transforming whatever it is. So another way to put it, a much more concise way to put it, is an asshole gets on the plane in Los Angeles, an asshole gets out of the plane in New York. It doesn't matter where you're at. It's the interior universe that's affecting everything around you. Another way to put it is a Buddhist quote, which is, some people will say to you, this city is better than that city, or these people are better than that people. Than those
but there's
people.
No differentiations.
I say to you, the whole world is on fire. And the idea is that what's up, the fire is the fire
right.
of delusion.
Your interpretation.
No. Let me, though, cloud yeah. this picture a little bit.
Please.
And because there's a lot to be discussed in what you've just pointed out. And we need to get back to that, because that's what Fred wants to alter, right? And then he's questioning what's real when that altered state.
When I'm okay. in that altered state, I'm going, why is that not real?
Okay, but
why,
hold on. I'm going to throw out another phenomena that affects all this, and that is the shared phenomena that humans have, the interpersonal, intersubjective phenomena.
Consensus reality.
Well, yes, that has a cognitive flair to it, but I'm of the opinion, I can't believe I've not brought, I must have brought this up to you before, but that I'm of the opinion that consciousness is a shared experience. I don't think consciousness happens
well,
in a single
when it's
brain.
Working, I'm in tune to every experience
I've
ever had.
But hold on here.
Sorry.
No, I understand. But to some extent, higher planes of consciousness that we sustain are things we have to kind of either let go of how we allow other people to impinge on our conscious right. phenomenology, or allow people to help us get to another plane. It's shared in some
you
extent.
You think consciousness is disembodied, like it functions outside of the human organism?
No, I don't. But I don't believe it exists in a single skull. I think it's something we co-create together.
Okay.
And I'm suspicious that consciousness, as we experience it, probably a little different quality 10,000 years ago.
So it's changing.
And I do believe that if you were raised in the woods as a feral child, you would not have consciousness. You'd have feelings and you'd have personal experiences, but you wouldn't have something I would call conscious awareness.
Interesting. So you think consciousness is kind of like a circuit that gets activated.
I think it's shared. Yes. And particularly two people,
so
two skulls.
So your theory is an individual alone.
Never having had social contact.
But what about the concept that we're all
very
connected?
Different.
Very limited and different, yes.
Very, well, limited? Do you think
yeah.
limited or just...
Well, who knows? Maybe it's more expanded.
You know, this would go into solitary confinement. And
yeah, but that's why it's so horrible. That's why it's torture.
It's like cutting your... It's like amputating.
Drew, are you trying to say that when I'm in these zones,
yeah.
that when I think... those bad racial shootings in the South and the movie, the church, that's something Fred Stoller imagined.
No.
That's because I feel that sometimes,
that
so maybe I'm not being...
solipsism, isn't it?
Yes.
No, I'm not being selfish. I just mean it's sort of like when you call... like that guy you said that in the cave that has no consciousness, but I'm part of him when I feel this is connected. I'm part of this brilliant people here. I'm part of the truck driver. There's no...
But I think, right. See,
no
this
barriers.
Is why I wanted to bring this up. I think when he's solipsistic, Fred, he's limiting some of that a little bit.
Right.
And I think maybe the cannabis is giving him access some way
what
to something.
What I find is when I have a breakthrough, same with meditation.
And I don't want him to get lost in a solipsistic sense of what's real.
So you,
you know what I'm saying?
But cannabis is amplifying some kind of... magical thinking.
He's freeing him a little.
Sorry
bit.
Sorry to talk about.
No. I'm trying to figure this all out.
Plexiglass window of taking notes.
Well, let me ask you something. In one way, we're not wired to bear the trauma of the world. Like tribes don't know what's happening to the tribe next to them.
Yeah.
So I'm too oversensitive. When that shooting happened, I can't watch the news. I can't put on links.
You want to do something? I'll give you a really cool
sure.
exercise to do that. This actually, I learned. When I was a kid, I stumbled upon this book my mom had called Raja Yoga by Yogi Ramacharaka.
I haven't known anything about your parents. What did your mom do?
Well, my mom was a psychologist.
And your dad?
My dad was a real estate agent. So, yeah. Well, yeah.
Where? Where'd you grow up?
Well, all over the place.
Where'd you start?
We started in, not real estate agent, but he worked in real estate.
Yeah.
Shopping center. So we started in.
Developer.
Yes, developer. That's the word. We started.
Rampager.
Yes. We started in Georgia and ended up a lot of other places. So I always just say North Carolina's home.
Okay.
But this book, Raja Yoga, Yogi Ramacharaka, first time I came in contact with like Eastern thinking that I remember. And I remember as a kid reading this and just being like, holy shit. As it turned out, Yogi Ramacharaka, it's just some English guy. His name was like James Thompson. I found out later. He made it all up. It was like a big, his identity as some yogi was a fraud. But at the time, I was pictured this guy in robes and the Himalayas. Anyway, there's an exercise in there, which is you begin a practice of, instead of referring yourself as me or I, you start referring to yourself as he. So when you're describing yourself to yourself, you don't think I am scared. You think he is scared. He is neurotic. He is worried. He is freaking out. He is this. He is that. Because it's an exercise that's trying to push you back into the place called the witness or the Atman or the observer, so that you begin to realize that in the same way that all this other shit, this phenomena out here is like dust in the lens of the eye of the universe, so are all your cognitions. So are is literally everything. And so then you begin this practice of not just diffusing from your thoughts, but diffusing from the very limited identity
of yourself
that you've decided is you, because it really isn't you.
You're right. Sometimes when I'm tripping on this stuff, well, I see myself from an out-of-body experience. And let me ask you, is this selfish thinking or solipsistic? I'm sitting here, and maybe I'm a little hungover, which I like the hungover. I tried to do an edibles last night. So I did. Well, so I'd have stuff to talk about, but I slept through it. And right now I'm sitting here, and I'm thinking, I could be hallucinating Duncan Trussell and Dr. Drew. Dr. Drew could be almost like in a movie, like a fictional guy, like we're making up the guru celebrity
that's how you're
guy.
Feeling, that's how you're feeling now?
No, I'm saying it could be.
No,
and
but,
why not? Let's say, not just you. Let's say... sometimes I think, what if this is a movie? Like someone wrote, there's a black guy, Barack Obama is the president.
There's
a guy made up Dr. Drew.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Do you ever get that kind of thinking? Like,
I'll give you something a million times trippier if you want, man.
And Fred Stoll is a neurotic kid.
Sure.
Like, we're all just a movie in someone else's.
Shove you down.
You know, we're fiction. Does that make any
sense?
Down
a deeper rabbit hole.
Okay.
Robert Anton Wilson, this is a good one. He says that actually we're not on Earth. We're in the star. I think he says that we are in the what's the name of the dog star, that star system? It's called
Alpha Centauri.
I can't remember the star system he says we're in, but he says that we're actually in a different star system.
That
the pyramids are placed there as clues that are somehow lining up with the star system, that actually we are in a kind of simulation where we are being trained, and this is what school looks like for an alien species, is that it places you. It's just here. So
yes,
let me go into what you're talking about, because it's a
you get what I'm saying.
Many of us have come to through psychedelics. So here's the idea: you, Fred, have been placed in this simulator,
right?
Super advanced civilization. We've placed you here because you're God. You're essentially a very, very super powerful God. You're a God. You're everything. And so what we're doing here is we're giving you a lesson in limitation. This is how you're teaching yourself, is by allowing yourself to experience.
You're getting this?
To experience limitation. And so every single thing that you're seeing, me, Dr. Drew, and come on.
It's in my imagination.
Lots of winks. We gave you a lot of winks, didn't we? A lot of winks. Like that time the guy was sending dick pics. His name was Wiener. Come on. Come on, man. Really? You believe that?
Right.
Right? You know what I mean?
But this is all stuff we created, so is it selfish?
But it's not that we... but then there's other winks, too, that you get. Every time...
Just probability generally is a wink.
Yeah, any kind of synchronicity is a wink from the designer.
I love synchronicity. That's my favorite thing.
Well, it's the relief you get when you're in a simulation and the people who are projecting the simulation into your consciousness send you signs like, hey, calm down for a second, man. This is not what you think it is. It's that great Bill Hicks joke. It's just a ride. You're in a ride. You're being given this beautiful experience of human life, this beautiful experience of limitation. And because you've gotten so absorbed into the character you've been playing, Fred, you're experiencing all this anxiety in the same way when you were a kid and you watched a horror movie, you would freak out. I remember watching horror movies as a kid, fear paralysis. I would literally go into a fear paralysis because I was so identified with the character in the movie that I was freaking the fuck out. So this same thing has happened to most human beings on this planet. We're in a kind of existential fear paralysis.
So Drew has taken the character of the celebrity guru, health guy,
yes,
spokesperson.
Healer.
Yeah. So everyone's the same, but they just put different things. You're the guy in Africa. You're the guy, you know, the rugby player, the vet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people, like, for example, what I'm trying to say also is, like, what if someone wrote a movie, like I said, where there's a, you know, those movies, there's a black president, but it's Dorian Hayward. There's a Dr. Drew type in a movie. Why is this not the same thing in someone else's movie?
Well,
you know what I mean?
I mean, that's where we get into this. This is where you get into the really interesting concept, which is
I'm imagining this.
You're literally imagining it in the sense that what you're witnessing right now is not the external universe. You're witnessing the neurological corollary that's a perfectly harmonized synthesis of brain chemistry. And
that's why I say, why is this not the real world? This is so legit. This is more rational than anything. And the world, okay, I define the world as a place where Fred is judged by his acting parts. He's not acting. He's always alone, you know, whatever. The guy that walks around the grove aimlessly, that's not me. But I've made myself think that's the guy.
Well, because it's fun. I mean, when you really get into it, anytime like I've experienced like some of the most intense drama, which the highest level of catastrophe, quite often, if you give yourself a couple of seconds to witness what's going on, you will notice that you're enjoying it. And then you begin to...
That's alcoholic stuff.
I'm sure...
Non-alcoholics don't enjoy it.
What's that?
Non-alcoholics don't enjoy it, typically.
Well,
I've noticed alcoholics tend to enjoy...
You mean
They have much more of a death impulse than the average person.
Yeah, it's the... Well, it's the...
They get high from the endorphins and stuff that are flying around.
I don't know if it's... I think that alcoholism is one thing that results from it, but I don't think it's just alcohol.
No, that's a result from it. It's just a feature.
I've known many non-alcoholic people
that like that
get off on drama.
I don't mean using alcoholics necessarily. I'm meaning people get high from the cortisol and endorphins that fly around. People like me find that, like, if I take a painkiller, I feel horrible. I feel terrible.
I
hate them. And I have the same experience from in drama and experiences too. It's like aversiveness. Like,
how
whoa.
Lucky you are.
I think you guys
this
are lucky
is why
because
you're
what
a doctor.
If but no, I think you guys anybody is lucky that likes opiates because what if you ever need them for cancer or something, you know you're gonna feel good. I know I'm gonna feel like shit.
Oh yeah, my mom was like that. She didn't like opiates and I remember like she would be like, I can't take painkillers.
You'd be confused.
Be like, what are you talking about?
Right. I'm that way with pot too.
When you said
which
feeling
is interesting
good
because the endorphin system in my brain or something is somehow
when
not good. It's just not good.
You're just balanced. I mean, it's, you know what
I think it's the evolutionary thing.
I've noticed there's a curious thing in our culture where people have to feel mildly apologetic for being balanced. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, you know what's funny?
You have to, like, when I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm boring.
When I first
too healthy.
When I I don't do this anymore. When I first would walk around like stoned or, you know, on an edible, I'd go, I don't deserve this. I remember sitting there drinking.
Well, that's
lemonade.
You just think about that.
Yeah,
I
felt so good. I don't deserve this. I drank lemonade.
You don't deserve
stoned
to feel good, Fred.
He
that's a
terrible.
But
terrible,
I don't do that anymore. But that would be my thought.
Terrible
this
thought.
Feels so good. Do I deserve this?
But you know, this is so basically what you're. The thing you're
so
just,
this, you said the same thing about this girl that you're about to date. I don't know if I deserve that either.
No. That may not work out.
All right. Anyway,
we'll
go
see.
Ahead, Duncan.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, what you're doing is
I'm saying the thoughts go there, but now I could discern them. Go, that's a bad thought. Get out of here. I could at least pop them, shoot them. I couldn't see all the monsters, the bad thoughts. They were so cluttered.
There were so many.
No, I couldn't discern all the negatives. I hate myself.
You were just trapped in a...
Yeah.
Yes, in my head. Fuck you, you're a loser, Fred. You're a loser. I didn't even know they were there. Now, because I've done the affirmations, I can hear, I don't deserve this. I'm a piece of shit. I go, psh, and shoot them. I could see them, and now shoot them away.
There's a lot of ways that, you know... What you're talking about is a great technique. There's a lot of other techniques. People say bow to them. They say bow to it. They say treat it like a guest coming over for tea. They say look at it as weather patterns. That's another common description. They're clouds.
It's another thing when I'm tripping from an edible, I'll be feeling good, and then there'll be a flash image of like walking around the Beverly Center, depressed, I'm lonely. These things from years ago I don't do anymore. And sometimes I'll go, hey, you could come in too. I'll take care of all of you.
You're
all part of me. Come here. You lonely Fred walking around. So you're all this.
The enlightened master.
And I'm like hugging them. And I'm feeling good. Then there's that thing, Fred walking around on his birthday alone in the promenade. And I go, you come here. Don't be afraid.
You mentioned the story, the analogy or the image to me of hallucinogens. Or substances taking you up in the elevator, opening the door, showing you, and then the doors go and you go back down. How do we get Fred into that mode when he's not high, or should he just be high all the time?
Oh, no. I think, Drew, a lot of things that have – first of all, you are fucking brilliant, and I can never read books. Oh. But what meditation I've learned is when I have a breakthrough, and with the edibles – I have something I learned. I can't articulate what just clicked. I can't articulate some conceptual thing, but I get it. I get it in images. So I feel I'm getting stuff. So some of these translate to the non-stone world, to like some of the breakthroughs I made. They're there. When meditation, when you have a breakthrough, you can't go back. You know what I'm saying?
But yes, that's right. Well, I mean, I don't – again, it's like the ego is so tricky that the whole time it's going to – the ego is very tricky. When you're getting stoned, what's getting stoned? That's the same question. It goes back to the same thing. Like when we say I am stoned, what do you mean? Like, what's really stoned? And really, if you look at it, you've just created a shift in your consciousness that has taken you out of your day-to-day reality that you were used to, and has given you this wonderful little
other reality.
Like going up into the park and finding a nice view and looking down on the city of the self. And seeing it and being like, okay, there I am. There's this thing that I call myself. So, but in the same way, it's like, well, that thing is now stoned, It's like
that's what I'm saying. It's just as legit a reality, and I'm trying to incorporate when I'm not stoned. You know what I mean?
In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, there's a great verse where God is describing the soul. And it's all these great descriptions, but it's like, it was never born. It will never die. It never came into being. It will not cease to be. It cannot be burnt by fire, withered by the wind, wet by water. It is undying, everlasting, unchanging, inconceivable, and transcendent. And so all these descriptions are human attempts to articulate this great observer of all things. And that thing doesn't get touched by this reality. This reality plays out in front of it.
This is almost a made-up reality. Like I said, judging myself by showbiz, by women, by money in the bank, by how long I've been mad. And it's all made up. It's not real.
It is real in the sense that in this moment, if you're playing this game that you made the rules to, there's a list on this side where here's where he's a success, there's a list on this side where he's where he's a failure. But it's really curious. If we look at the human population on Earth, and look at the number of people who are in the most dire levels of poverty, and the number of people who don't have enough to eat, and the number of people who don't have access to the internet, and the number of people who don't have medical care.
Sure.
And you go to any of them, and you say, hey, check it out. There's this life that we're going to let you move into.
Oh, me. It's Michael Jordan.
Yes.
Yes, I know that. I know that.
So you do see it.
Yes. No, I'm not as depressed and negative as people think.
So what I mean is like so many other people.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they would want to like be you, but your life situation.
People misinterpret me as negative and hating myself. I'm fighting it.
But you go to somewhere. You go to the outback somewhere. You say what do you say? What makes life meaningful? Or are you happy?
Well, yeah, you go to somebody.
And what would they say?
Water and eating.
That's a great question. A lot of people out there are going to be super happy, but
with nothing.
With nothing.
And most of them are going to talk about the people they love.
Right.
And who love them.
Thank you, Dr. Drew. You're right, because I was about to go on this materialistic thing. Like, nah. Yeah, you're totally right. That's it. It's like, you're right. That's it. But
But I think Fred's limiting the way he loves and is being loved. It sounds yes. sounds like a platitude.
That's why you're the doctor.
Because he's not open, but then the pot opens him.
Well, right.
Right?
Yes, it opens you up to see that you're not loving yourself.
And that this isn't the world, and these judgments aren't accurate.
It's interesting to hear Fred talk, because for me, I like going deeper into reality. I like being more present, more in, more committed.
But I keep saying, why is that not present, that state? Why is that not real?
I'm not judging okay. on it. I'm just saying my instinct is to go more into
reality. You see what I'm saying, Duncan? Why is he saying that's more real?
More into the thing you might otherwise call real.
Well, I mean, I've had this conversation where, if you have an epiphany while you're high, people will degrade that epiphany
exactly.
because you're high. So, and I don't think you're doing that necessarily, but people do that. Getting caught up in, is this experience real versus some other experience that isn't real? Every experience
is real.
Okay. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah.
That's safe to say.
I think that's a way to sort of approach your question.
Sure.
Yeah. It's all real.
Yeah. Yes.
There cannot be an experience that isn't real.
Right.
Because anything that
is.
Exactly.
There's no way around it.
Something cannot both be and not be.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And it's very strange to think about that, too, because that means that if you exist, you've always existed. Have you ever thought about this?
Yeah,
before?
I do, and I start immediately going to the concept not just of time but temporality. What is temporality?
Right.
You know, is the temporality of this moment simply a holistic forever, or is it something biologically linear that just all the time is in the sense that we think about it as humans is just a marking of change. That's based in our biology.
Right.
That's it. Otherwise, it's just temporality. It's just this
one moment.
Yeah, it is
something.
All just one moment.
I don't know what the fuck.
Right.
Right. It's all, it's a moment or it's not, or it's infinity and a moment or whatever. So maybe we do always and have always, will always, or
just
maybe not.
One moment.
Well, let's go to the temporality idea.
Okay.
Okay, so let's imagine timeline. It's just a timeline.
Time is different than temporality.
Okay. Well,
timeline is superimposed within temporality.
Well, let's say that your life
is a timeline.
Is existing in time. And it starts with
biological time.
And ends in biological time.
Yeah,
I love that you use that term. It's so cool, man. It starts when you're born, ends when you die.
Yeah.
Okay, but even if that's the case,
yeah.
because you've existed once,
yeah.
that means that before you existed, since the beginning of anything, your potential to exist was always there, correct?
Wow. Yeah.
Your potential is infinite. And when you die, the potential for you to be, because you have been,
is the same.
Is the same, mm-hmm. which means that really we're just the shadow of our potential reflecting into time. And there's really no way to not exist once you exist, because you've always been.
When you said time, I thought of this image, this analogy.
Rippy and weird.
Do you know what's that thing with MP3s? What's that Apple thing where, I'm at that age, maybe it's the pod where I can't think of words anymore.
I've got that.
That software.
That's linear time.
not movie magic for talking into it. GarageBand.
Yes.
And when you do GarageBand, sometimes you're talking and it's the dots of the conversation, but sometimes you can squeeze it together.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what I feel like sometimes life is. Like, why not just condense? Time isn't this, like a line. It's like maybe all together. You know what I'm saying?
Well, have you guys ever had a near-death experience?
I know.
I almost drowned twice.
And doesn't time go in that moment? Yeah.
It sounds like a bit, but it's true that when we went to this cheap hotel in Florida, there was no lifeguard.
How old were you?
I was, I think, 7 or 8. And the undertow, I didn't know what it was, but the harder you try, the more it brings you out. So,
right.
And that thing about going down 3 times drowning, that's true. Yeah. What is that?
What do you mean?
I don't know.
3 times.
You kind of can make it up like 3 times, and that's about it.
And I was drowning. I was going to die. I was. The undertow, the more, all of a sudden, I was all the way out there and went down 3 times. And then my father ran into the ocean and pulled me out. And this sounds like a comedy, but it's true. My mother goes, Freddie, we're so glad you're alive. We'll take you to the toy store. You could get anything you want. You know, so then I saw this stuffed animal. It's monkey. It was like $35. She goes, anything but that. meaning we're glad you're alive, not that glad. You know, but I once did a joke. This was too subtle. Like, because I almost drowned another time. They say when you're drowning, you see important parts of your life flash before you. The only parts I saw were all the other times I was drowning. But it's too subtle for stand-up. But, yeah.
Oh, it stopped working.
Yeah. Oh, clubs now, please.
But I was lost in the mountains out here. I was 14 and with a big pack on my back, and we tried to climb our way out. And when I was like hundreds of feet in the air, I was in a chimney that started collapsing on me, and I was sliding down. And I literally had a moment where I went, I have one chance to heave myself up this thing onto the platform, or I'm going down. I'm going off. And in that moment, and I get a little PTSD just thinking about it, in that moment, time just goes like you can. It's not that your whole life passes before you. It's that your whole life becomes a dot. It's the craziest.
But isn't
feeling.
That what it is anyway?
Yeah. Yes, but it feels like a dot. You can see the whole thing like right there. It just all is in front of you.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was
a weird experience.
Like
you see your life in the way that an astronaut sees the Earth.
Yes, it becomes a dot. It becomes a temporal dot. It's like it all compresses. And all moments are equal, and they're all right in front of you.
But that's what it should be when I'm stoned. But
isn't that
it feels
wild?
That.
Wild.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's what it is when I'm stoned, and it should be. Let me ask you another.
I got to get some of that edible stuff.
This is a stupid question.
I'll have panic attacks.
This is a stupid question. But
just have some Xanax.
When it's working. Yeah, sometimes you, like I said, you can't finish a thought. It's almost like schizophrenia, and it's almost recreating mental illness, what we think is a deficiency, either pot or edibles or
mushrooms. That's
what they
used to think, though. You know what?
When you eat enough, you can have that happen.
In the history of psychedelics,
right?
There's a few great moments in the history of
psychedelics. But it's like schizophrenia, they think.
When Tim Leary goes down to Mexico, eats mushrooms, and apparently, as a psychiatrist, someone studying the mind, has this revelation where he thinks, I now understand schizophrenia because I have temporarily become schizophrenic. The way that we can use this for treatment, because now I've been into that space where maybe a lot of other people.
But we strive for that, so we're saying mental illness is a fun thing. And I don't mean to be silly or joke.
So the first reaction was, this is mental illness. But then you read Huxley talking about mescaline, and he says, this isn't mental illness. This is the state of an artist. This is the state of a genius. This is the state of being caught up in the, you know, he describes.
This guy shouldn't be a comedian. He's too smart to be a comedian.
He is a comedian.
But I'm saying.
He's a comedian because he's not.
I'm saying you're eons above what I think a comedian
is.
I'm sorry.
Man. There's no. First of all, the whole label thing.
Yeah, I know I'm doing it.
But anyway, the whole point is, it's not. I don't think it's mental illness you're experiencing. And this is what Huxley says. He says, what you're experiencing is the filtration system of the human mind is suddenly stopped. So
you're taking it all more holistically.
Yes. The human mind is, interestingly enough, spending a great deal of energy tuning shit out. Way more energy tuning stuff out than taking stuff in. Because like right now, like listen, there's a cricket in here.
Mm-hmm.
There's humming, buzzing. Listen, just listen. There's all this, you can feel your ass in the chair. I can feel my shoe. There's a splinter in my hand. I can feel my breath.
Crickets driving you crazy now, right?
But so all that stuff, the lights.
I must be schizophrenic.
You're not schizophrenic. you widened out a little bit of what you're experiencing. So your mind is always filtering the shit out. So when you take a psychedelic,
who's controlling it?
Who's controlling the filter? Well, that's a great question. Who do you think is controlling the filter?
That is also the question of, you know, free will and everything else is wrapped right into that. It's, you know, at what moment does something start, and who is there to start it? The moving mover, right?
Right. That is the question. Yes, exactly. Where are you in your body? Who's making these choices? Why are you filtering this stuff out? You know, is it good to filter stuff out? Absolutely. Sometimes you need to filter stuff out. I think autism. When I see someone who is autistic, I think this is like me if I have eaten way too much weed.
But it's almost a positive you were saying autism and mental illness because the Enlightenment's.
Well, it can be really brutal if you're resisting it, and it can be really brutal if you need to be able to enter into consensus reality and or what they call the marketplace, and spiritual Ram Dass calls it the marketplace. This is you need to be able to go into the marketplace.
Wow.
Do your work, haggle if you need to haggle, be tough if you need to be tough, be nice if you need to be nice, but that doesn't just have to be how you live.
That's not the totality of reality with a capital R or who you are.
Right.
Right.
And the other thing I meant to say to you is that you're very hard on yourself. And
I'm much better than I used to be.
But you could say that you have been.
And I've been terrible.
You've been in
all those cliches.
Relationship with yourself.
The worst enemy. Even the guy who sued me for 7 months made my life miserable. Things like that. I've done worse to myself. But I'm better. But I'm good. I'm able to talk like I'm being repetitious. Discern these things and go not good. But they still
good.
Pop up there. Go you piece of shit. Go get out. It's almost like I look at it like a crying baby. Like the thing. I'm a loser. I'm a piece of shit. Oh, my little boy is upset. It's okay. I learned to tell myself. It'll be okay. I never heard the words "it's okay" from Pearl. I heard "you'll come home in a box. We're gonna die." You know what I mean?
Right.
The people will come and kill you. You'll get raped in Coney Island. So I never heard the words "it's gonna be okay." So I learned to do that. So when I'm going,
I'm
a piece of shit. I say, you know, the inner child thing, long before I came up with that, you know, on my own sort of, because I work with this comedian when cable, remember cable was not cable, but public access.
Yes.
So there was this comedian, his son, "Dad, you can be on that cable show." And then I realized if I have a son, so then I had an imaginary son for many years that I can't come home. I'm a loser. I'm a piece of shit. Aww. You have to be strong for your son. Go, yeah, you know, I didn't get the Young Comedian Special. Oh, but we're going to be, in red, I just have one line on Amen. Oh, Dad's going to be on a show. I'm so proud of my dad. He's at one line on that thing. So I started having an imaginary son who's excited for me because my mother never had the concept of being strong for your children. She falls apart. So as much as I say sounds like I'm beating myself up, I learned, like I said, when the guy, "you're a loser, Fred, you're always alone," rather than even shoot the bad thought, go, "come here, baby, it'll be okay." You know what I mean? He's a little boy in me that's crying.
Right.
Who never has done, said, "you're okay."
Now let's jump, take that idea, that concept. Now move into here's the really intense concept.
Sure.
So the concept is the universe is composed of ultimate hippie stuff here. Forgive me.
That's why I'm saying when I was with Morgan Murphy, when you get first discover pot, I sound like, dude, we're all one, and I sound so hacky.
But
it's true. Like they say, a cliche is a cliche because it's true.
The universe is love.
Right.
Everything's love. Everything is love. So there's already been a kind of weird love apocalypse. Love has swept through all things. All things are love, right? There's a tsunami of love that is pouring into you right now. And as it turns out, if you can't love yourself, then you are the last part of the universe.
But do you see what I'm saying?
You're the last part of the universe. The one little piece of the universe, especially if we get into the idea of solipsism or everything's a projection of you. If you're surrounded by love and it's all rushing into you, then the final step in this universe waking up and entering into this nirvanic bliss state for the rest of infinity is for you to stop blocking the love. The moment that you allow yourself.
But in a way, it almost sounds like what I'm saying is negative thoughts isn't, if it's like it's just the baby in me crying and I go, come here.
You're passing judgment on the thoughts.
Yeah.
Wait, what is it with convergence? What do you call it?
It's convergence. That's a great word for
it.
You
talked about it on the Drunk History I did.
Oh, I did.
Yes.
I was hammered.
You said that the whole world's going to be, we're all going to be machines and we're all going to be thoughts and we're all going to be the oneness.
The singularity.
The singularity.
Well, there's a personal singularity, you know, that a person can have, and that's the moment that you really start loving yourself, and that's what you're doing. There's no rush, by the way. There's no hurry to do this. But what I think about, man, if I'm being really hard on myself and really calling myself a piece of shit or looking at decisions I made in the past, I'm like, you fucking idiot. Why would you ever do that? I think to myself, man, it's the same thing you're saying about the little kid. I just think, what if you're treating your dog like
So wait, I want to get one last question sort of explored here real quick, which is, Fred, the opening question Fred asked, I don't think we've answered yet, which is, why is his reality that he's in when he's high and feels good and can take little trips and can assess the world differently, why is not, I don't want to call it reality, why is not that experience, let's say, more real than the experience or equally as important as the experience he's having, say, right now? Is that, wasn't that your question?
Yeah, well, again, maybe it's my judgment. So I define the real world as a guy who's 57, who's always alone, who is not working as an actor.
The real world,
but that's not the real world.
The real world of him feeling shitty as opposed to the real world that's altered by a chemical where he feels good. Why is one...
But sometimes it's not altered. It helps you get to something you need to get to.
My answer to that is it's all the same world. You're just... You're shifting the... It's like if I have a glass of tea and I add sugar to it, it's still tea, but now it's sweet tea. If I add poison to it, this is poison tea.
And so it's very much like what, Fred, you were just saying, which is it's all good.
Yes.
It's all real. It's all fine. And it's all and ultimately, when you're in the more negative thing, your self-caretaking becomes more important.
And I say it's going to – I learned to tell myself it's going to be okay. I'll tell you what I do is like I learned to do little things like when I can't find – I'm late. I can't find my glasses or my keys or my wallet. Rather than – I try to go, I love myself. I can't find my wallet. I love myself. I can't find my keys. That's rather than, you piece of shit loser again.
Right,
I'm literally a loser. I can't – you know. So I learned to just say I love
weather,
myself.
It's weather. I like the weather analogy. It's those dark clouds
cool,
that
right?
come in. Let them blow in. Let them blow through. It's all good. It's all real.
It's cool. It's just weather. And also, man –
it's just weather.
Another thing you can do when you're talking about the 50 thing and the actor thing and all that stuff is imagine those are – pieces of a prison cell you're living in.
Uh-huh.
So when and you've outgrown it.
You've outgrown it. Those are not real things. Tell me if this is the same thing. I don't know. Maybe it's
something. I got to go, you guys. It's
okay,
you have
a meeting.
Do you think we got good stuff?
Well, yeah. This is amazing. Right. You're so cool, Fred.
No, you.
I knew this would be good. I knew it would be good. Yeah.
I need you to... You got to go, but email me some books. If we ever have time, The Denial of Death, the whole philosophy is that I'm obsessed with delusional people. I wish I could be more delusional. Because I get scared because we're trying – unless you have kids to live for, we need delusions to stay alive. Like, oh, this one-man show.
I don't buy that cognition, man. That's not true.
Next pod.
Next pod. I got to go to this meeting. Right. I'll give you –
Get me some books.
Cool.
And The Delusion of Death.
Thank